Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. God, we are solving a lot of society's problems during the breaks, or at least discussing them. Maybe not.
We extended our health and hair loss discussion into the obesity epidemic. And I actually was thinking about this yesterday, whereas I can't remember. Brandon and I were talking about some technological advancement, iPads or something. And you thought about, like, okay, like if you took a leader of a country from the Renaissance era or mm-hmm. something, or really from like the 1800s, let's say a king or a dictator or a president, and they all of a sudden traveled in time to the present day, and they'd probably be shocked, impressed, and alarmed by various things. You know, the internet would blow their mind, all of this other stuff. But I think the thing that might blow their mind the most from a world leader perspective is when they ask the question, So when was your last mass starvation? And you're like, well, actually, our big issue is that we eat way too much.
We got more than we know what to do with.
And the president or the dictator or whoever would be like, come again? What's this now? Well, no. When was your last famine?
Yeah.
No. Famine's not the problem.
Yeah.
We eat too much food as a people.
Damn it.
Well, and they'd be like, well, what, like the rich people? No, in fact, actually, the poor people.
Yeah.
They're eating too much food. Yes. how are you not elected every single year? Like, well... And then you'd have to think, well, actually, no, we stepped down after 8 years. Like, what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude,
do you not have weapons to fight off the... Yeah.
Oh, that's a tremendous conversation. I love that. And then the old dictator from the 1800s is like, well, has anything bad, like, really happened in the last several years? And you're like, well, we did have a pandemic in 2020 that lasted about a year or so. And the dictator would be like, well, you must have had starvation then. Like, oh, no, we got even fatter.
It was a real problem. We just thought that, like, everybody was working from home and just eating all the time.
That's all we were doing.
It was crazy. What'd you lose? 25, 50% of the population? Oh. Much less. Much less.
Oh, my God.
There's rough times we live in.
Yeah.
Awful times.
Oh, yeah. Terrible
Awful
times. Yeah.
Always remember that when you get too down on the state of current affairs. For the vast majority of human history, famine was just around the corner. It was like you didn't know. You're like, there might be a famine next year. Yeah. I don't know.
No.
I just gotta go to church and pray for rain, because who knows?
You live in an era where you can get 6 hamburgers for $5 almost anywhere.
Okay. Damn this era where I just have so many different things to indulge in. I've got all this entertainment on my magical phone.
My phone.
That's okay. I'd be telling the world leader from the 1500s. I got to tell you what, man, it's really going to be a problem, because we've got so much food available for relatively cheap, even with the by historical standards, super cheap, even with the inflation. But then also, I've got all these entertainment options available at any given time.
Right.
You mean what? Does your cousin Cletus have a banjo? No. I can get any of the music from anywhere in the world at any time, including from when you were alive.
Yeah.
Like right now. Here you go. Listen to it. Yeah.
Right.
I've got a recording of the of the composer that you had executed last week, back in your time. I've got a recording of his right now, right here on the phone.
Right. Hey, dictator, show me the three hottest women that you wanted to see naked back in the day.
Hey,
I'll have
remember
this.
Who you used to remember that hag Mona Lisa that you guys thought was hot?
Well, I got
she's
an app.
A solid three in today's world. That woman never squatted a day in her life.
Oh,
she had
God.
No back.
Oh my God! I'll have her naked for you in 18 seconds. All right, Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman.
Oh, where do you find your virgins? Oh, well, that's okay. Long story. Where do you find your virgins to marry?
All right. So it would appear as though the Tigers are in the lead. They are in the lead. The Tigers are the leader in the clubhouse to sign Alex Bregman.
Come and take him, AJ.
But they are having a hard time swallowing the fact that Bregman and really Scott Boras, maybe even more than Bregman, want $200 million. So it appears both sides want each other, and they've had productive talks. But the Tigers, wisely, because they're not the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Cubs or any of these other teams, the Mets, that can just spend, they want Bregman, but they want him in a way, same way the Astros do, that doesn't compromise their future. And that is the sticking point right now. And this is where it gets very interesting that we live in a world where the Astros' six-year, $156 million offer still has a chance to be the best offer that Bregman gets
right.
on the marketplace.
And I was getting annoyed over the last few days. People keep asking me about that, like this team or that team had supposedly offered Bregman a $196 million contract.
I've seen nothing.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. So, like, no. I'm annoyed that I had to spend some of my valuable leisure time that I just informed my dictator buddy about. I've tried to search this out, and like, yeah, there's no like genuine reported evidence that he's gotten anything above what the Astros have offered him at this point.
No, I haven't seen anything.
Which is an interesting dynamic. I think, from Alex Bregman's perspective, man. If he turned down that offer and it could have been something that made him an Astro for life or, you know, for all intents and purposes for the vast majority of his baseball career, and the Astros indeed did give him the high offer, even within like $5 or $10 million of it, that's going to suck for him. I think for us as Astros fans, I guess it makes it a little easier just to process and digest it that, all right, at the very least, it's not like the Astros were being stingy or anything.
No.
They did actually genuinely stretch a good amount compared to what people thought they were stretching. But all right, sorry, Alex, you made your decision. I'm not emotionally tied to you anymore. I don't feel like the Astros screwed it up or anything.
No, and this would be the second one, Correa being the other, that will have left. And I think possibly, like, I think there's part of Carlos Correa, even though, you know, he got the opt-out deal,
yeah.
you know, with Minnesota when he left here. So he opts out after 1 year, goes and actually gets two big contracts that were both unraveled by his medicals, and then winds up back with the Twins, 6 years, $200 million. The high offer the Astros made him was 5 years, $160. So he's ultimately going to make more money. He's guaranteed more money than the $160. But again, like Bregman and like Altuve and like some of these, Carlos Correa, if he'd stayed here, would have been a hero. You know, he would have been an Astros hero. We wouldn't have had Jeremy Pena. But I think there's got to be part of Carlos Correa that regrets not taking that deal. And I think that, you know, unless Bregman just wanted to leave and, you know, put up his own shingle somewhere else, there may ultimately be a part of Alex Bregman that regrets it because the Astros just moved on. They're like, okay, we can't wait on you anymore. You know,
I think this is where, like, I'm not trying to be, like, overly idealistic here or anything, but in terms of just kind of balancing the money side of things with the emotional side of things or the sentimental side of things, I do think that sometimes if you're a player of a certain caliber and especially one who's played on a championship team, yes, it's a, look, I don't begrudge people for going and taking the highest dollar amount out there, but at the end of the day, it's all it's generational wealth, and it's more money than the vast majority of people ever see in their lives. But like when you talk about the things that will endure for decades onward for the rest of your life, I mean, there's a certain value in your quality of life in being a Craig Biggio, a Jeff Bagwell, like having an attachment to that team and organization and the fan base. And those guys didn't have championships.
That's right.
to even compound the matters. That I do think it's worth it. Like, no matter what your personal priorities are and everything, I think when you're a young man, you might not really appreciate that. And you're like, because even if you're not planning on making Houston your permanent home, it's a different feeling. Like, I have a little smidgen of that just in being from, like, on the first Texans team.
Yes.
You know?
No,
like,
doubt.
Obviously, I'm not nearly the caliber of player of Alex Bregman or any of those guys. We didn't come close to winning a championship. But, like, I feel an attachment to Texans fans. And that wasn't even the only place I spent my career, but it was the best stretch I had in my career, and I was kind of like I was just one of the first guys there, and like I feel really lucky to have had that. So it'll be a shame for Alex Bregman if he was going to leave and be a mercenary, which is fine, that's cool. But man, you also, if you don't end up getting the extra money, and you did kind of walk away from being that guy who was a lifer. It's just, look, he's going to be just fine.
Yeah.
It's not going to destroy his life or anything. But I wish some younger players would just be able to maybe kind of have that perspective on it.
Yeah.
And not get as hyper-competitive about the price tag. And especially when you consider the actual, because look, the price tag, so much of it boils down to ego. Because we've shown this time and time again, very few players take into account the fact that Texas doesn't have any state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
They want their ego fluffed, and they want to be able to say that they were the highest paid player or whatever. Because on the bottom line, a lesser offer from the Astros could still end up with more net income than a lot of the other places.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll see what happens. Spillane was sitting next to me at the Christmas Day game, and I was like, man, I don't know. Bregman might not get paid. And he's like, he's getting paid. He's getting paid. I'm like, well, who's going to pay him? Well, he's just getting paid. And I'm like, oh. So now I'm rooting for this to not happen so that when I see Spo at the wild card game, I need it to happen between whatever Bregman gets. I need to happen between now and the second weekend in January so that I can rub Spo's nose in it.
That's a little bit of a, yeah, when somebody who's smarter than you about a topic is like kind of just patronizing towards you or dismissive, I guess. I did that once back when I was on CSN Houston on some kind of panel discussion. You know, this is when I was relatively new to media, and I was studying hardcore on Rockets stuff. And I brought up Mote Yunus to Jonathan Fagan as a guy that might get more playing time because I'd been, you know, doing my research and everything.
Sure.
And Fagan kind of brushed me aside.
Oh, yeah?
And just kind of scoffed at the notion that Mote Yunus was going to play more. And then lo and behold, Mote Yunus started playing a lot more. And I felt like,
Did he? Did you see him again? And did he apologize to you?
Or? No. I didn't hold a grudge or anything. But it was a lesson learned.
Yeah.
The other lesson I learned was when I was suggesting to, I defer to a lot of you guys when it comes to baseball, because you've got such good like long term memories of baseball and everything. But when I was like kind of like I was thinking why they should really be moving Springer to center field. And both Mike Meltzer and Robert Hensley scoffed at me. They scoffed at me.
Baseball diehards. Oh, man.
Yeah. And I was like, I guess I'm an idiot. I guess, like, all right. I guess I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So you didn't rub Fagan's nose in it, but I would imagine, did you?
Oh, yeah, I rubbed it in. Yeah.
Sure,
Meltzer and Hensley heard about it. Yeah.
They would have to, right?
It was a breaking news sounder the first time ever. They said they were going to. No, I don't.
That would have been funny.
That's the kind of crap I would have pulled, though.
That would have been funny. We're getting a lot of text messages on. We're getting some college football ones. We'll circle back to the college football playoff. I agree with this person. I don't like how the bowl games have evolved. I remember waking up on New Year's Day with several TVs going because there were multiple games going on all day long. Yeah, like that got ruined with the BCS. Like it's been that way for a while. The one thing I will say is that the college football playoff has at least taken the major bowl games, which are now quarterfinal games, and given them all to us within a 24-hour period. When it was the BCS, they used to just string them out like Rose Bowl this night, Sugar Bowl this night. I'm with the texter. I always loved the fire hose of football games on New Year's Day, that there were like 12 football games. Now, of course, that was also back when you had like 60 writers vote for who the national champion was.
Yeah.
Those were the good old days. Yeah.
College football has annoyed me for so many years that now it's gotten to the point, like just various aspects of it, just whether it was the computer program or the old BCS or anything else before that. There's always something that's a huge controversy about the way you determine a champion that now it's just part of the deal for me. So I just try not to overthink. Like, I don't know how old the person who's texting is. After you go through several decades of this, you realize that this is just part of college football.
Yeah.
The arguing, the jockeying for position, the defense of your own record, all of that stuff. That's college football. It's just part of the deal.
Yep.
And it's gonna keep changing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing set in stone.
Ocho texted this in earlier, and I thought the exact same thing watching the game. Gentlemen, what do you think of drafting Matthew Golden from Texas as a Tank Dell replacement if he declares for the draft? I was thinking that exact same thing watching Golden in that game yesterday against ASU. Former U of H kid like Tank Dell, but transferred to UT, and I think he was the one transfer that drove Dana Holgorsen nuts. I think that's when Dana Holgorsen started referring to like the big school sniffing around U of H. I thought the same thing. He's not as like hyper twitchy as Tank. Like nobody is. Like Tank might be healthy. Tank might be the twitchiest person of all time. But he does bring some of the same stuff to the table in terms of his ability to get open and get deep. Like he's a really good football player.
Yeah, and he can play all over. Like, you don't look at him and think, you know, with Tank, people still look at him. I listen to opposing teams' podcasts and everything. They're like, yeah, they think he's a slot receiver. They're like, well, our nickel's going to be on him a lot. Like, no, he plays all over the place. It's just, there's not, these days, your slot receiver might just as easily look like Nico Collins as he does Tank Dell. That part of it, I think, in his ability to create separation. The only question would be, all right, I don't know if you need to. If Tank Dell has a chance of playing, like assuming he gets his surgeries done and everything will be all right, I'm hesitant to look. I don't want another small guy. I feel like that's your small guy right there. Mm-hmm. You don't need a guy like you got too many of these zippy little guys. And Golden's a little bit bigger than Tank though, right?
Oh yeah.
He's not tiny like Tank.
Not
is.
Tiny
he's
not
a
like
big
Tank.
Receiver.
He's not huge though either.
So maybe he's actually the best. Maybe he's that best alternative there. Yeah, I would like them to have more. I mean, like you look at it right now, and Nico is the only tall, big receiver that's got explosive speed. Now you're not going to go out and find somebody that's as explosive as Nico, very easily. But I don't want to be a small receiving group.
No. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Quarterbacks and running backs around the NFL, what they bought their offensive lines. Do we know what CJ bought his offensive line? I don't know that we do. But did he match up with any of these? There's one in here that I think is particularly stupid, and I think Seth Payne will agree with me as to why I think this is stupid, and we will share that with you coming up next.